Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. I am Pat Iyer. We are in our fifth year, and we're now in our sixth year of production of Legal Nurse Podcast. The show is broadcast to listeners all over the world, with our primary listeners being in the United States, Japan, Australia, Canada, UK, Germany, and places elsewhere. I'm happy to be able to introduce to you a legal nurse consultant and wound care expert, Rebecca Corbett. Rebecca has experience in a variety of fields before she entered nursing in 2015. She focused on dance, she focused on music, she focused on massage therapy, and gravitated to nursing, where she continues to help patients through her services as a wound care expert, and soon to be, by the time you listen to this, will be a nurse helping patients with wound care through hyperbaric chamber therapy. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Pat, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here with you.
I know that our LNC listener is very familiar with the risks of skin breakdown and how they impact the patient, as well as how they affect litigation. Can you bring this home to us in terms of the factors that we should be considering when we're looking at charts in terms of how wound care risk factors, or skin integrity risk factors more correctly, how are they assessed in both long-term care, hospital, and even home health?
This is very important. And there's a saying amongst nurses, you know, regarding legal charting. Charting is a legal document. If you did not chart it, it did not happen. Nurses cannot chart every single thing that they do. However, that considered, especially regarding wound care, there are some details in terms of examining a chart that I am going to zero in on and hunt for, you know, that should be there, okay? So in terms of long-term care or even hospital stays, extended stays, many of us already know that pressure injuries can happen within a matter of hours. So time is a factor here. So home health also. But let's focus on, you know, long-term stays, all right? So with skin integrity assessment, the Braden scale is a standard scale that's been around for quite a while. It's been interpreted into various languages. I know there are other skin integrity assessment tools, but that is kind of the benchmark. And every facility should have some form that's actually part of their charting record. And the first thing I'm going to look for is the admission assessment out of the gate. What happened when this patient was, you know, first addressed and met, evaluated by whether it's the home health nurse or the nurse in the hospital or the certified nursing assistant? There's different roles that we'll get to, but I am looking for that first assessment because that is absolutely important. I think most of us know that hospital acquired pressure injuries or facility acquired pressure injuries or pressure injuries that appear during the time frame of care that's provided to a patient or a ding, you know, on that facility, the care group that provided the care. So the initial assessment is absolutely the first thing I'm looking for. And that is probably the most important, because that establishes what's going to happen with the plan of care and it's going to establish the risk factors for this particular patient. And it's just paramount. It's the foundation. And I was taught very well in nursing school to pull up the covers, look at the feet. And we, you know, nurses and nurse aides, we've seen everything, and everybody's busy and they're overloaded. However, this is paramount. We've got to pull up the covers. We've got to pull down the briefs. I found a pressure injury in the hospital one time where the man, I looked in between his butt cheeks and I found a stage 2 pressure injury. So, and I documented that, you know, that was, you know, right when I saw him. And so on admission is important because if it's eventually down the road found later, but it was never documented on admission, well, guess what? You know, whoever was looking after the patient when that wound was discovered is responsible for that. So that is where litigation will start to pin, you know, mm-hmm. the thread starts there.
As we think about the legal nurse consultant looking at medical records and trying to determine if the providers met the standard of care, what should they be evaluating in the chart? First of all, we talked about the initial wound assessment, but it doesn't end there, right? I mean, there are requirements to look at the skin on an ongoing basis. Can you talk a little bit about what parts of a long-term care chart will start with that kind? Okay. Should the nurse be looking at to determine if there was a conformance with the standard of care?
Okay. First of all, in addition to the initial assessment, as we discussed, a very detailed history and physical is something I'm going to look for because, again, I'm looking for a care plan. I'm looking to see what, you know, say there is a wound on admission, okay, and what is the whole history of this person. What's fascinating about wound care is it's interdisciplinary. It involves so many different pieces and team members that are going to work together, hopefully, to help heal this patient, right? So there's a lot of things I'm going to be looking for, but a very detailed and current history and physical that also identifies comorbidities that may influence, affect the wound healing, and also possibly create adjustments in the care plan. So I'm going to be looking for that. Then I'm looking for the actual care plan. I'm looking for the identification of a wound or all wounds and the characteristics of that wound. Most systems, long-term care, home health, hospitals have templates that describe, you know, the moisture level, the redness, et cetera. An important factor also is wound measurements, especially with chronic wounds. And a skin tear may not be measured, but I think it's good practice to measure just about everything. But with a care plan, also a standard of straight 12-6 and 3-9, I've seen a lot of wonky things, and I'm looking for consistency in that care plan and for measurements to be there basically every shift. And a person, especially in long-term care with a wound, they should be checked every shift. That means every 12 hours for that wound and even for new ones. So I'm looking for that documentation. I'm looking for wound care orders by the provider, whether that is MD, physician assistant, nurse practitioner. I'm also going to be looking for whether there were a set of just standing orders. That gets interesting because there may be, I worked in a facility where there were standing orders. However, if I noticed a change in a wound that required a change to the care plan, I would fax, call, or if the doctor was on site, of course, you know, communicate immediately. But that was important, and charting that is important with any changes to the care plan. But the measurements are very key because we need a benchmark, we need a map of what is happening, because standard of care with wound care is with, say you're throwing treatments at a particular wound, a deep tissue injury on the sacrum. If you have orders to do something every 2 weeks, that needs to be reassessed. If it's working there, the measurements are showing closure, you're getting some, you know, granulation tissue, things are looking better, they're improving, well then You know, if it's working, keep going. But if it's not, it's very important to look for that reassessment, and standard of care is typically every 2 weeks. And so if that wound is not improving, then something needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also looking at nutrition. That is a big, big, big deal. And prealbumin levels. You know, I'm looking for what a provider may have ordered. If the wound looks like it's infected, is there a sedimentation rate? Is there a C-reactive protein? Have vascular studies been done? Bringing in all those things are important. They detail the care plan and they may change as things go along. So I'm looking for consistency, but I'm also looking for changes where they're needed. But nutrition is sometimes overlooked and prealbumin levels are overlooked sometimes. So that's a benchmark for determining, you know, how much protein that person has available in their body, because protein is essential for, that's the building block of wound healing.
Mm-hmm. And I know that particularly in long-term care, maintaining appropriate nutrition can be quite problematic, particularly for somebody who has to be fed and rely on the staff to be able to meet the needs of a group of people who have to be fed throughout a meal and maybe simultaneously fed. I have visions in my mind of a nursing assistant sitting with a couple of people lined up, you know, bite for you and a bite for you and a bite for you, to try to get through that process of feeding in a way that helps to make sure people get enough.
And also certified, you know, the nurse tech, certified nursing assistants, as you mentioned, they are most likely the ones that are going to be feeding these wound patients, and they have their own charting. So I look for that. There are templates that say patient ate 20% of meal, or, you know, there are percentages. And so each shift, I know, you know, this is an issue that's not my wheelhouse, understaffing and all those things. But, you know, but what you described would be a very good tech to me, because they're multitasking in a way that's efficient and getting the job done. But I would be looking for their charting, because that's important. And the nutrition, it's a big deal. I would be looking for weights. You know, the weight should be taken on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So, like, again, the timeline, I'm looking for changes. I'm looking for responses to those changes.
And I think that's one of the key points, the responses to the changes. You mentioned earlier about the team that's involved in caring for people in healthcare. Who are some of the people who would typically make up the spectrum of professionals who would be addressing skin integrity issues?
I like this question. So in addition to the nursing assistants, the nursing staff, you have the providers that will ultimately be making the orders. But then you have, this is where we get into infectious disease. If there is an infection, maybe the patient needs IV antibiotics. Sometimes they need to go from a facility, long-term care, to a hospital that provides IV therapy. It depends on what is available at that facility. So infectious disease. Also, vascular is a huge piece, assessing the vascular status, the perfusion, especially to people's feet, their limbs. That is really, really important. And ankle brachial index is a standard that's non-invasive. It's done with blood pressure cuffs at the ankle and in the upper arm. Also, the toe brachial index, because say if you have someone with diabetes, you know, there's sometimes if they have uncontrolled, you know, especially hyperglycemia, that is going to be a problem. And so perfusion status is going to be a big indicator about what should be done with the care plan for that patient. And then again, so endocrinology would get involved. If that person is diabetic, we're going to involve them. Then there's also physical therapy and kinesiotherapy, occupational therapy. I know at the VA that I worked with, KT was a big deal in terms of managing not only assistive devices, but also offloading. And they also worked with occupational therapy and physical therapy regarding support services. So there's so many different factors, it really is. And then there's dietitians, because sometimes I have heard that in med school, most MDs get about 45 minutes of nutrition. So, you know, that is a factor. Then you also have pharmacists. This is something in the record I'm going to look for too. And that might be something, you know, don't forget about pharmacy, because if you want to, you know, as a legal nurse consultant, you're going to have to cross-check things and compare them. What was the nurse tech's note? What was the nurse's note? What was the diet? You know, all these different team members we're talking about, but don't forget about the piece of pharmacy, because especially a place like the VA that times and date stamps every release of every order. I've compared that for a case where I was looking at paper charting for a long-term care facility that stated one thing that was contradictory to what the pharmacy was presenting. And that's a federal pharmacy record with very accurate time and date stamps. And so often these wound care products, including nutrition, when it's medically ordered, like Boost, that will oftentimes be covered by insurance because it was ordered as a medical necessity, right? So that would process through a pharmacy. But so many products, zinc oxide, you name it, all of these things from the formulary, it's very important to check pharmacy records to make sure they add up. And also the amount, you know, if there's a discrepancy in, you know, staff or, you know, upon interview, deposition, whatever, is saying, well, I change that dressing every day. Okay, so doing the math with how many, you know, wound products were available, how much, compare that against, you know, what was supposed to be done. Pharmacy is going to be a great place to find a lot of important legal details.
Going back to something that you said earlier, tell us about how is the ankle brachial index calculated?
Okay. What that is determining blood flow. So you're comparing the blood pressure in the upper arm to the blood pressure in the ankle. And so if you have, and there's a mathematical calculation where you divide, you put the one in the arm over the one in the ankle. And so if there is a certain difference, then it's indicative that there is not enough blood flow going down to that area. And it's a first step in a sense. An ABI is a place to start. But then if there is an indication that not enough blood flow is going down there, then the patient will need more detailed vascular studies, venous mapping, arterial Dopplers, ultrasound, all of those things. So with the ABI and even the toe brachial index, you know, it's just measuring how much blood is, you know, the heart is able to pump down to these extremities where often there's, you know, they're tough to heal if there's a lack of perfusion.
My name is Pat Iyer, and I am with Teresa DeWitt Lynch. Together, we have planned a course to help legal nurse consultants interpret and analyze sexual assault exam reports. Teresa is a sexual assault nurse examiner who has extensive experience in her role, as well as an educator to teach people about this process. She testifies in court regarding these types of cases. And we thought this was a skill in terms of interpreting these reports that would be useful to you as a legal nurse consultant in your assistance with attorneys. In this unique course, we're going to be covering content that will help you achieve some objectives. Teresa, can you share with our viewer what are some of those objectives?
Absolutely. So the course is going to be a multimodal course that will consist of lectures, pre-recorded lectures that the learners can watch. And those cover how to read criminal and civil charges, how to read sexual assault exam documentation, differences between child and adult sexual assaults and documentation, basics of forensic evidence. Those are just a few of the topics that'll get covered. Then they'll also have two sample cases that they'll review on their own. And then the course will wrap up with a one-day hands-on. In the morning, we'll kind of review the information. And then in the afternoon, we'll dig into that third case study that they have, and then we'll ask them to write their report on that case study and then send it back for feedback. So not only are they getting, you know, how to read the documents associated with sexual assault exams, how to identify the relevant injury and evidence, but they're also getting a short course on report writing too. And then, you know, real-time feedback on what they submit that they could use as a sample to show attorneys in the future for these cases.
So to summarize what you just said, our learner will be able to watch videos to get deep knowledge, review worksheets, examine reports of sexual assault victims, prepare a comprehensive report, get feedback from us, and participate in a live Zoom program, which will cover about a 6-hour span and will be recorded in case that our learner is not able to attend that day. Here's how you can sign up for this. You can go to this link, http://lnc.tips/sexual assault. The link is right below this video. That's all one word, sexual assault. http://lnc.tips/sexual assault. We would love to share this knowledge with you so that you can be of even greater assistance to your attorney clients. Be sure to sign up and participate in this event. So is a blood pressure cuff put around the upper arm and then put around the ankle, and then those numbers are recorded into this formula? Is that how it's done?
Yes, that's how it's done. So there's a division, and then you come up with, like, is it 0.8? Sometimes we have vessels, arteries that are calcified. So you might get a 1.1, you know, where like it's, so there's different ways to look at that. But again, an ankle brachial index would be a place to start. But then more thorough vascular studies, if there's any indication that there is a perfusion problem, then it would go much further than that, or it should.
Okay. Interesting. I know that the tools for treating and preventing pressure sores are constantly in flux. And I know that a lot of this is based on clinical studies to determine what's most effective. Can you give us a sense of what is current now? First of all, for the prevention piece, and then we can talk about the treatment piece.
Okay. For prevention, again, that's an interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary piece. Again, that's where it goes back to the very thorough history and physical, the H&P for a patient. What are their conditions? Do they have heart disease, diabetes, et cetera, et cetera? So getting a full picture to work with and assessing that patient, you know, patient by patient, what are their risk factors? What are their comorbidities? So that is the place to start. And then in terms of prevention, I would go back to the Braden scale again, but looking again, nutrition, looking at mobility. Mobility is a huge factor. Can that person turn and move themselves? Are they cognitively aware enough to respond to directions? Are they bedbound? Are they chair bound? Those are big, big factors. And if they are, then what are those support services that can prevent a wound in the first place? It's so much easier to prevent one than try to heal one, especially in patients that lack mobility. So that's it. That's a really key factor. And then if a patient is incontinent, what sort of care are they getting? You know, are they being checked and changed and creamed, you know, every 2 hours? That can be challenging, you know, but what is the protocol? I would look at the facility protocol and pay attention to that. You know, and I would say for long-term care facilities, my nursing teachers taught me this, and I have experience with this, that it always helps a patient if they have a loved one, a friend, a family member to check on them, you know, that shows concern and is monitoring this. So part of what I would look at in the chart too is, this is very important, that if the patient has some cognitive difficulties understanding directions, then who is the responsible party? Who is communicated with? Who helps make decisions for that patient should they become unable or are already unable to make those decisions. So I would look for communication, education, and charting about what happened with that. Because patient choices, not everybody has an advanced directive. So encountering, again, during the care plan, things may change. Who okays that? That's a big deal. And I would be looking for that in the chart.
And yet, you know, there's something else that's occurring to me as we're talking about support services. And I know that you've spent some time working in home care. I think it's clear if you think about hospital beds that they are readily available, and the default, it seems, is to make sure there's some type of pressure relieving mattress on the bed. And that's also clear that that's necessary in long-term care. But what do you do in a person's home when they need care to the level that they are immobile and at risk for skin breakdown? Are there support relieving mattresses available for home use?
And it probably depends. I know we have a worldwide audience. Insurance is going to be a factor, unfortunately, oftentimes. You know, what will insurance cover? And what I would say the gold standard for prevention, which I would like to see, many hospitals put someone on a low air loss mattress. There are gel overlays that are a little less expensive. A typical hospital bed that comes to the home does not have this sort of thing. Have a mattress that will move up and down and assist with, you know, shifting patient positions to some extent. But as far as really offloading, there's, you know, that is a factor. So what I look for, especially bony prominences, heels, you know, offloading like Prevalon foam boots, that's one brand, but the foam offloading boots, because floating heels with a pillow is problematic. People may move around and the pillow won't stay put, or, you know, so The foam boots, sometimes patients don't want to wear them. And again, I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but important to look for in charting. If a patient refused something, they have a right to refuse a treatment, a procedure, or anything, but that must be documented. And so I look for that too. But back to the offloading. So there are, even at the level of Walmart, there are egg crate, there are gel cushions that are going to be better than nothing. And for patients that maybe have to do even a half hour sitting in a car, going somewhere, you know, anytime they're sitting, because the, you know, the pelvic bones, you know, especially when people start to become older and generally lose body fat, they're losing that cushioning that's a protective barrier against pressure injuries. So keeping that in mind, you know, their footwear, what they sleep on, all those things are important. But definitely when they're sitting, because a lot of times you have patients in at home that want to sit in their recliner and watch TV, and that is their right to do so. Mm-hmm. However, there are options that are available even to people with some, you know, income issues and insurance issues. You know, unfortunately, for a low air loss mattress, many insurance companies in America anyway will not put out that money or even authorize that pre-authorization, right? They won't authorize that unless there's already is a wound. So a gel overlay mattress would probably be the best option should an insurance company or a family or a patient be unable to afford a low air loss, you know, bed system themselves.
And I know that litigation trends show that there's increasing numbers of lawsuits against home care as people have shifted out of being patients in the hospital and being kept at home for as long as possible, or sometimes in replacement of being in a nursing home. We have a family friend who has a live-in aide who's taking care of his wife who has dementia, and she is slowly deteriorating. And the irony in this, you could appreciate this, Rebecca, is that the aide is 75 years old and told our friend, you know, I want to retire. I want to not be working every day and taking care of your wife. She brought it up in October. We're recording this at the end of February. She has not made good on her request and she hasn't left, but it has become so apparent that she is the person between the wife going into a nursing home and being able to stay at home. And without that person turning, repositioning, cleaning, feeding, all those things that are necessary, she wouldn't be able to stay in her own home.
That is unfortunate. And for family members and people unable to care for their loved one, I have personal experience with that. And looking after someone as their needs increase, and especially if you add in cognitive issues, dementia, et cetera, and the person in their activities of daily living, they need help getting changed, getting cleaned up. It is an exhausting task, and especially for untrained caregivers, it's exhausting. And so people, you know, all over the world are having to make that very difficult decision about what they do. So I would say, in terms of staying current, because more people are informed, family members, there is a higher awareness that's continuing to grow because cases are mounting about pressure injuries and public awareness is increasing. In terms of for anyone, whether they are in wound care or not, but have an interest in this, I'm a member of the Wound, Ostomy, and Continence Nurses Society. And six times a year, they put out a journal that is peer reviewed, that is up to date. And the membership is only $135 a year, and people can join. You don't have to be a nurse to join. And this is such a valuable resource. Rather than just hunting around all over the internet and trying to piece things together, they do it for you. And they're one of the gold standards. In fact, I'll hold up this textbook here. This is one of the, you know, gold standard textbooks, and it's by them, the Core Curriculum of Wound Management. But they, you know, for any family member that wants to find out those things, standards of care and updates, because wound products do change. You know, there's a lot of stuff to keep abreast of, that's for sure. But I would definitely say that would be the place where I would go first.
All right. So you've shared a really valuable resource that also helps with legal nurse consultants who are making evaluations on whether the standard of care was met regarding wound management. I know that our viewer who's watching this on our YouTube channel, or our listener listening to this on one of the many audio channels that carry Legal Nurse Podcast, are going to want to know, how can they get in touch with you, Rebecca?
Okay. I am on LinkedIn. And my website at this time pops right over to there. So I am R as in red dash Corbett dash legal dash nurse, C-O-R-B as in boy, E-T-T. And I'm also R Corbett legal nurse at gmail.com. And I would be happy to go down the rabbit hole with anybody that has more specific questions, because this is my passion. I could talk about it for hours, and there's just so many factors to it. It's almost hard to condense it. So anyone is welcome to contact me with questions and if they need any links or referrals, you know, to other websites that can help them with that particular issue, I'm happy to help.
And do you review cases as an expert witness involving wound care and skin breakdown?
I do. And I am open, you know, to review anything involving that. As a registered nurse, I'm known for very meticulous attention to detail, which I think helps wound care, a little obsessive and very detailed. So I will review any case for merit. And I know lawyers where, you know, their main focus, especially for long-term care, is pressure injuries and falls. So that being my wheelhouse, I think that is my primary focus, but I'm open to reviewing any, you know, medical record to screen that for, you know, duty, breach of duty, care plans, all of those important details, because at the end of the day, what we're all focused on here is human beings. We're talking about people. And was that person, was that patient, that human being looked after properly? That's a big deal.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca. We covered quite a spectrum of discussion related to a paramount issue in healthcare of maintaining skin integrity, preventing skin breakdown, intervening quickly, intervening with the right approach, and looking at the multifaceted team involved in taking care of the patient. It's not just the doctor and the nurse. You've pointed out the importance of physical therapy, of occupational therapy, of nutrition, of the wound care team when necessary. Mm-hmm. Looking at support surfaces and the equipment aspects of making sure that we're giving the best possible care to our patients. Thank you so much for being on the show, Rebecca.
Pat Iyer, thank you so much for this opportunity. I appreciate it. You're a legend.
Well, thank you. And be sure to come back next week for another episode of Legal Nurse Podcast. We'll have a new guest, a new topic. We welcome your questions, your suggestions for topics. You can reach me at patiyer@legalnursebusiness.com, and I'm happy to hear from you. Until next week. This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. I have just finished interviewing Kim Speed, who is a branding strategist, a branding visibility person, and an individual who helps small businesses help to define their brands. Kim, we covered a wide range of topics in your podcast. Can you give our viewer or our listener just a taste of what they can expect to receive from your program?
Oh, I would love to, Pat. So one of the first things we talked about and everybody really needs to understand is what a brand is, and really knowing that it's not your logo. Your brand is more than your logo. A logo is a very important part, but we get into what other things make up a brand and what the difference between a brand and branding really are. We also talked about, you know, the importance of having a niche, knowing your ideal client. We also talked about how do we create a brand so that we stand out above our competition. What are we doing to let people know who we are? What kind of experiences are we providing? Because all of the things that you do in your business are supporting your brand and helping you show up and be seen, be heard, and most importantly, to be remembered. And we get into all of that in our talk.
This is a critical topic, Kim, because many legal nurse consultants have questions about how to differentiate themselves. They are marketing to the same kinds of clients. They're looking to be able to say, this is how I can help you, and this is what makes me unique. So please be sure to watch Kim's podcast on our YouTube channel at Legal Nurse Business, or listen to it on Apple, Spotify, and other platforms. Kim Speed and branding. And I'm Pat Iyer, and look forward to having you watch the show. Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.